that are participating in their program. I'm going to run through them. The highlights.
Mr. Medema, have some of them run off somewhere? Where exactly are half a dozen of these entities? I mean, what sort of day do they have at their SOEs? Or, you know, they spend 5 hours not used to Parliament's regimen of a 12-hour day. Where are they? Not just the departments. The departments aren't state-owned enterprises, are they? I can see Transnet Lodge's light. Is it PRASA I see here? Where's Eskom? Eskom's there, still keeping the lights on. Yeah. So, and where are all these, like Unique Engineering, Smith Capital is here, and who else? So why have we got such a big gap now? Can you please come up? I'm not a preacher in a church, so you don't have to worry. This is not a church. I can't see you, you see. That's my problem. And I'm not bringing binoculars from my office. So that I can study the birds. Right. Let's go ahead.
In the spirit of time, we just have to go straight into the key challenges. One of the key challenges since the designation of rolling stock has always been that there is... can you hear?
Yeah.
Ah, that's better. That's Major Komani, yes. Okay. Since the designation of rolling stock, one of the key challenges has always been the application of the local content requirements. 3 years into this program, we're still dealing with issues of interpretation. We're having the OEMs, the state-owned companies, the suppliers, still coming to the DTR saying that, what do you mean by 3 to 5 years? What do you mean by month 25? These are some of the delay tactics that we are seeing, that people don't want to designate, they just want to hide behind the language and the interpretation. So if we have to talk about the 1064 program, 66 locomotives have been imported. The OEM, CSR, which is China South Rail, and GE, are not the first supplier into the country. These OEM have been supplying the locomotives. They have supplied on the 95 deal and the class 43. For them to be given the opportunity to import in this 1064 contract, we felt that that was another way of going to make more problem for the localization. And from the DTI, we were saying that we are going to have a challenge based on just this technicality. So then we have another problem called the Prasa Givela. The Prasa Givela, unfortunately, when it was issued, it did not have to comply with the local content requirements because at that point we did not have the legislation in place. We worked with PRASA to assist with the localization program, but the importation of the 21st train also, we saw also as another issue that might create problems as we move along, but we are yet to get there. At this moment, I will pack the PRASA program. Then we have the major key challenge in this procurement of rolling stock is the supply chain policy of Transnet. Their policy on security of supply does not always support the creation of national champions that can be nurtured to become significant global players. Their orders in this 1064 have not been consolidated. We're still talking about the first one being imported, the phase one, the phase two. Those things to us are not helpful because if you want to create a robust supply chain, you need to give certainty. You need to give people long-term contracts from the day you say, I am now procuring. You can't be saying that I am coming back, I'm going to discuss, I'm going to do this. These things are not working in terms of our industrial policy objectives. Then another issue here is that we have situation in Transnet where they are producing products that are similar to what the local industry is able to produce. So, as we speak, we are yet to receive their make or buy strategy so that we can understand exactly who is doing what, when, and how do you free up the resources, because we don't have a big industry that can accommodate more than five companies. So we need to deal with these issues with Transnet. Another thing that we are experiencing in this is the delay and changes in the delivery schedule. The contract on the 1064 was signed in 2014. This contract has been delayed. And with delays comes money. With delays comes supply chain issues. The DTI is confronted with number of companies and requests saying that we are under financial stress. And when we are talking to Transnet, when we are talking to TFR, when we are talking to suppliers, we're hearing different stories. So nobody can tell you exactly what is causing the delays. And we are believing that today maybe Transnet can be able to explain to the House and tell exactly where are the delays coming from. And if we are having these major delays in the 1064, what is going to happen to the supply chain and who will cover the cost of this delay? It will be appreciated if they can expand on this matter. And another thing, we have high import content. I have explained that we have got a high import content in this contract, something that we wished could be reduced. And because of some of the decisions that have been taken as part of the 1064 contract, the import content is likely to rise. You will see in the next slide what we are talking about in terms of the import content. Another key issue was the black economic empowerment and the black industrialists. With this type of contract, you would wish to see a sizable number of black industrialists coming out. In some areas, we are winning. In other areas, we are losing out. So I think there's a need to drum up support for the black industrialist program and make sure that as and when required, more and more of this work is given to capable. If we don't have capable suppliers, we need to start identifying companies that have got capacity that can be developed to produce some of the things that we are importing from overseas. So this is the trade statistics. Now, if you look at this graph, it just tells you in terms of railway how much South Africa is exporting, how much South Africa is importing. And if you can see, I want you to look at 2010, where we were in terms of imports and exports. And look at 2011 and look at 2012. The graphs are going up. That means South Africa is exporting and also importing. But look at what happens after the contract has been signed, the 1064 contract has been signed. The import jumped. South Africa, a country with people that are not working, has been able to import over 9 billion worth of rail transport equipment, a sector that has been designated, a sector where people should be employed. We can afford to go out and buy 9 billion rand worth of rail products. How did we get to that decision? I think maybe the state-owned company can explain. And then look at what happened also in 2015 and 2016. This is not a good story to tell. We designated the sector. We said, let's leverage public procurement. Let's create jobs. Let's make sure that we acquire technology. And then part of this was to make sure that when we enter into contract negotiations, we negotiate with the OEM and tell them that this is what we want for South Africa. Because we have an order. That was something that we were supposed to use. But the trend is that we are able to import over 4 billion worth of products into this country, and our people are not working. So I want to show to you what type of things that we are importing. So if you look at this one, the first one is the electric locomotives. These are locomotives coming from China. The second part, the red one, is the other electric. These are diesel locomotives coming from America. The red one is America. Then you have 8603. These are self-propelled. This is Prasa type of equipment. As you can see them, they're just coming in because Prasa just delivered Brazil. The coaches from Brazil just came in now, last year and now. And it's picking up, and we hope it's not going to go up since they have now delivered their 20. We're not going to see a situation where they're saying there's delivery delay of the factory, we would like to have additional two being imported. I think we need to be on a watch out. on this. And then Prasa has committed to us that actually no such a thing will happen, but you never know. So I want you to look. That's the Brazilian, is the green. And the 8605 is the coaches that are procured by Prasa, and they are coming from Brazil. Look at 8607. 8607 is a major concern. It's a nightmare for the industry. If you want to localize or industrialize, you cannot industrialize without having a robust supply chain that can be able to deliver components or systems that you need to assemble together into the locomotive. Imports on parts are increasing because we have the issue in the 1064 where OEMs are free issuing products to Transnet for assembly of the locomotives. And for as long as OEMs are supplying parts that are imported from China and America to Transnet Engineering, it means the chances of a local supply chain being built here are going to decrease every day. And this is a major challenge that we need to deal with in this contract. So we need to see more and more of the parts made locally. We want to see more and more of the designated components being done locally. As we speak, I don't want to go to a list. As we speak, in the 1064, there are locomotive products that are designated, that are imported, and then the OEM has not complied with the requirements to request exemption. By request for exemption, we mean that the OEM needs to come to the DTI and say that, DTI, we have done everything that needs to be done. We have engaged the local industry. We don't find suppliers. Can you help us? Or can you help us to reduce the import content? Or, and we agree. But today, as we speak, on the 1064, we are seeing and we are hearing that there are imports that are just coming into the account, and that's it. And that is something that is very wrong that needs to be taken up. Let's go to this one. In terms of the interventions that have happened so far, companies that are participating in the rolling stock contract have received some form of assistance from the DTI, IDC, NEF, and others. But these supports are not going to be sustainable if the local industry is not supplying, if we don't have a view of exactly how the state-owned companies are going to procure in the long run. If you would still remember the presentation that TF Transnet made on the build program, they were just talking about 2016 and 17. We can't be talking about 2016 and 17 when we should be looking forward. What is the future? Is that information communicated? Do we know exactly what are their projections in terms of their build program? We don't know. How will we inform decision in terms of policy? How will we tell suppliers where to invest if we don't know exactly what are the projections looking like in the next 3 to 5 years? We don't know. No, I don't know. And then I'm responsible for policy at the DTI, and people look at me like, you are not helpful. You are not helpful. We can't work with you. We don't know. Go look for the information. So for as long as the DTI, and DTE is here, for as long as the DTI has got no side in terms of what exactly the 1064 contract entails, what the state-owned company has agreed with the OEM on, we will never be at the position to be able whether our policy on localization is effective or not. So, and another thing that I want to bring to their attention is that we have got a valid instruction note that was signed by National Treasury. And then in terms of, there's a section that deals with post-award of the tenders. Post-award of the tenders, it means that once they have made the pronouncement on who will be the preferred supplier of rolling stock, that applies for Transnet and Prasa and other state-owned companies, DTI should get the annexures explaining or detailing how the local content and other things will be achieved. And also there's a section that says that post-award, DTI must also get the copy of the contract. For as long as we don't know what Transnet and the OEM have agreed on in terms of their contract, we will never come up with effective policies. So as we speak today, DTI has got no sight of the contract. We don't know. But we are seeing a situation, locomotives are being delivered. Locomotives have been accepted. Locomotives are being tested. Imports are coming into the country. companies are closing down. We don't know. So hopefully today, maybe Transnet will be in a better position to explain, give us information, share with some of us some that can be shared and be able to move. Because as we speak, the industry is frustrated, the sector desk is frustrated, and we are nowhere close to deal with the issues of localization for as long as we don't have adequate information at our disposal. So in terms of other interventions that the DTI has, we have got the National Foundry Technology Network. This NFTN purpose was to deal with the issues of the foundry and other forging capacity. If you remember, Naledi Nhlanganiso is a forging company. Part of this localization program was that we don't want to see things like castings and forgings that deals with the type of wheels and other things being imported, because if you don't have a local base to produce and supply those things, your localization policy will not work. Hence why we updated the instruction note, because in 2011 when the instruction note was issued, OEMs could just import the castings from China, from America, from everywhere, and then yet our foundries in Jimiston, Cape Town, everywhere were not utilized. We amended the instruction to make sure that the capacity that already exists in the country is fully utilized. We have done so. But after doing that, there are no orders. We need clarity in terms of what is Transnet strategy, how are we going to localize, how far, how long it will take us, so that we can also make some adjustments in terms of our policy interventions. And then ongoing participation with industry also is happening, because what we are also learning is that as and more OEMs are bringing in new technology in the country, their supply chain also needs to innovate and change. And that is also an area where state-owned companies, when they contract, they need to make sure that they contract for the betterment of industry and make sure that more of technology is transferred to our local industry. There is no way that a South African company can talk to a China South or China or GE and tell them that I want technology to be transferred to me. It's not going to happen. It's either the technology has to be transferred to a state-owned company where it can be safe, or somebody that can be trusted must be transferred with technology. So the issue of technology transfer are very serious and they need to be dealt with. And for as long as technology is not transferred at the time that is needed, we're not going to be able to win on this localization, because we will have policies that say 55% local content, 60% local content, but they will say, oh, your processes are not correct. This one, this one, this one. We're not going to win. So the contracting, it has to start with the way in which we contract, the way in which we negotiate. We have got the tender, we have got everything to say. They can't come here and tell us what they want us to listen to. In their home countries, they are localizing. When they do business in China, they are localizing. So when they come here also, they must listen to us. When they go to Australia, they are localizing. They're not even asking. They are told, this is the participation program and this is how we want it. So we should also be saying those type of things. Obviously, it's not going to be an easy discussion. We need to negotiate with a point in mind that we have to get what we want for our own people, and that's what matters. So recently, since the issues have been escalated, our Minister of Public Enterprise and the Minister of the DTI had a bilateral engagement so that some of these issues can be ironed out. But we have to move with speed, because if companies are closing down, if people are being laid off, if the locomotive program is being extended outwardly, we're going to have major problems. So a strategy from Transnet on how they see this 1064 program being delivered is going to help. And then in terms of outstanding policy issues, we would like to see designation being applied extensively. If you cannot complain,
I think you should be so pleasant and courteous about it. This is not a, you know, tea room conversation or something. Don't say, please let it. Tell them.
Okay, they're listening. Designation must be complied with. Actually, we are not even... We have even decided that no more exemptions will be granted up until an OEM or a supplier can prove beyond reasonable doubt that South Africa has got no capacity. The issue of technicality, the issue of material, the issue of that, we have had enough of it. The localization program of South Africa, if we have to say it all, is that at some point the pain speck, the localization is held at ransom because a pain speck of a locomotive or a pain speck of a Prasa coach. Why are we specifying these expensive paints? Why are we specifying these expensive mirrors when we know South Africans cannot meet those specs? How much does it cost to invest in those paint booths and paints and everything? Why must we go through all these processes? Okay, then there's the issue of industrial finance. Companies who got orders are struggling with industrial finance, because if you have stop-and-go type of programs that we are having, IDC wants to see a bankable project. They can't rely on a word of mouth or your contract. They want their money. They want to understand, if we give you the money, will you be able to repay it? So if, for as long as we have got contracts that are delayed, contracts that are not doing what they were supposed to be doing, we will never be able to access the money that is readily available for our assistance. But still, more and more of this money is required, because the working capital issues is very serious. Rail is very capital intensive. If you want to meet the GE spec on paint, for an example, you have to invest in a new paint booth, a new spraying this, and your people need to be trained. All those things cost money. And our suppliers, some of them were not even aware that they're going to find themselves dealing with the issues of quality like this. The specs that have been prescribed for are very high. You saw even the welding that Pete talked about. The welding standards, the European standards of welding. It will take long for our people to be able to meet that spec. But the other thing that you will also have to ask yourself as a department is, if we're going out on procurement and we require these sophisticated trains, and yet our people have not been able to be taken through, was the timing right? Was the timing right? Were we ready as a country for this type of rolling stock? I don't know.
You can just tell me. I read somewhere. Seems that this has gone on the blink again, has it? It's fine. In one of the papers, and of course if something is in the paper, one wants to check on it as well. When the media, we all know how these things, sometimes people don't even mean what they say on Twitter. But there it is. But I read somewhere that some of our coaches have got... ablution facilities that would be better in Westminster Palace. Now, have I got that wrong? Or was there some, the blue train, but it didn't say the blue train, it didn't say Transnet. It referred to just an ordinary railway coach. I don't know, but I have kept it at home, so I'll bring it out. And all of those here today, maybe it'd be a good idea to scan it to you. Because perhaps it was a figment of the journalist's imagination. And you know, they say even cameras these days can capture ghosts, so one doesn't know what to believe. All right? So let's just see how accurate that story was and is. But, you know, the point you're making here, the only thing I would say to you, really, in DTI, and that is it Director in Industrial Development Department, Metsi Kamane, is you feel very strongly about this, but I think what you do need to make clear to everyone doing business in our country, especially our state-owned entities, but also those black industrialists and others contributing to the economy, that these aren't requests, these are laid down in law, in legislation, and you have every right to insist on it as trade and industry. And you just spell that out in your last 30 seconds, please.
we are done, except there's one point that I want to bring to the table also. PRASA.
Sorry, I've just seen it
here. 600,000. This is why I say I don't know how accurate this is for a train toilet seat. Is that correct? For a train, who else owns trains in this country that the regular person uses? Train toilet seat. And let this, it says, yes, this is from something called Newswire 24. So I didn't imagine it. There we are. Fine. And, yes, I don't know. I don't want to go mention people's names who are not sitting here. Right, just carry on. Sorry, Metsi.
Okay, I just wanted to make the House aware that in as far as compliance with the National Treasury Instruction Note on rolling stock, we are still picking up areas where PRASA specification is not on board, especially when they're procuring for the maintenance of the existing fleet. And this is an area that they need to do very quickly, because we can't, when they are procuring capex, like the new rolling stock, the big stuff, there is compliance, like you see it there, because the people are there coming to the DTI to inquire, to ask. But on small items, remember, small items are things that can keep 5 people employed in the country. It's things that can keep a foundry busy. So we would like to see them complying on maintenance. And it is even within their right to even review the contract that they have signed. The fact that the contract is expiring in 2019. We are not pro applying legislation in retrospect, but where it makes more sense, PRASA should be able to tell the people that they have contracted with, saying that we have capacity. Are you sure that the things that you are putting in our trains are locally made? Same as the 3,600 coaches that they are buying. They signed the contract that does not necessarily comply with the instruction note in its entirety. And there are parts that we know Givela has committed to do locally and that Givela has not committed to do locally. And we are saying to Givela, Givela, today as we speak, we have capacity. What are we going to do? And we have been saying to PRASA that, PRASA, we need to start talking about the cost and benefit of Givela not complying with the instruction note. We are not in the business of fiddling with the contracts. We're not doing that as a department, but we are just saying that there is an instruction note, there is capacity. How are you going to deal with Givela's contract in view of what we are having on the table? So that is something that we are still discussing. And then I would just want you to be aware that the instruction note and the capacity existing today and when the bidders were bidding is too different.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Kamani and DTI. I noticed DTI emphasized that they were working cooperatively with the Department of Public Enterprises. Is that correct, DDG?
Madam Chair, two things. Last week, the Minister of Trade and Industry, Minister Davies, and the Minister of Public Enterprises, Minister Brown, met in ministerial bilateral, as Ms. Kamani has said, and we are setting up a joint task team with Transnet to examine these issues, which Metsa has said are of great concern to us. And then secondly, I know one of the members raised the issue of verification on the instructions of the minister. We've set up a task team which is going to be looking at the South African Bureau of Standards, much wider than issues of verification. That's all the issues related to partial testing and industrial capability, testing capabilities with respect to supporting the industrial effort. But one of the issues that will be looked at is the question of verification and the cost of the compliance and this is also a National Treasury issue, who, as you mentioned earlier, Madam Chair, who covers the cost of verification, especially in fleet procurement, where verification and traceability are critical issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DDG Strachan. Can I please ask the Department of Public Enterprises, DDG Jackie Molisani, I look on the right here, which is where I thought I'd ask staff to ask you to move across much earlier. That was half an hour ago. Please do so. The DDG, Molisani, and Mr. Lebohang Ntwampi, Director. Did you not ask? Right, I think go straight into it, DDG. We do have your presentation here.
Morning, Chair. Thank you, Chair. We'll actually just go straight into it. But I just thought in terms of just probably indicating with the issues that have been raised when we actually listen to them about the issues of verification.
That's an excellent idea.
Okay.
Exactly the way it should be done.
Okay.
And the rest is, you know, just sort of filling in the gaps.
Yes, yeah. I just want to support what the DG from DTI is actually indicating, to say that our minister and the minister of DTI will...
Okay, that's better. Okay.
I'm a bit short.
Okay.
Okay. I just want to support what the DDG from DTI has actually indicated, that there is some engagement going on between the Minister of Public Enterprises and DTI to resolve some of the issues that have been raised. We do realize that there are obviously issues that we need to get alignment and they need to get resolved, and we do take cognizance in terms of that. That's the first thing. And also to pick up at the last colloquium, the issues was raised quite sharply by the members of the committee around the verification and how independent that has to be, and that would be part of the scope of what the technical task team will actually have to look in terms of actually verifying that and making sure that what is actually being committed to is actually being done. So on our side, without much ado, actually, it will actually, we're hoping that it will actually give effect to when you look at the presentation that we've actually submitted to the members about the key performance indicators. It's slide, I won't be long. On slide 4, the key performance areas that we actually want to actually look at, and that is what we'll be actually compacting with our state-owned companies. Those are the areas that we actually look at in terms of the industrialization and transformation given where we are at. And these are very much underpinned by the government's policies, including the Black Industrialist policies and the BEE, and also the revision of the Triple PSA. So these are some of the KPAs, the key performance areas about industrialization and transformation, and also the KPIs, which are local content, which is what this committee is currently preoccupied on, that going forward it gives us an opportunity that at the next cycle of shareholder compact, then we know we have something substantive, quantitative, that we can actually align and actually compact with the SOCs, because this is one mechanism that we actually use as a department to hold the SOCs accountable and even to report to us, because what happens is that this shareholder compact, it is what we get into with the departments on an annual basis, and then on a quarterly basis we get reports that actually being written to us, that they give us feedback as to how far they are or whether they're meeting them or whether they're not meeting them. And in the event where there is some deviation, then they must give us an explanation as to why that is actually happening. But that is a formal way of actually doing it. But there's also an informal manner whereby we interact with the state-owned companies in terms of the targets that have been set for them. So that is what I actually wanted to highlight. I think probably my colleague Lebohang,
Mr. Ntwambe. Yes, I'm just looking here, Mr. Ntwambe, is it? Do you pronounce the M?
Yeah, you pronounce actually every letter and it is Ntwambe.
Very good. Go ahead, Director.
Thank you. Chair, I think the issues that our colleagues in the Department of Trade and Industry have raised are quite very important. And what we need to be looking into is strengthening the recent things that DTI is mainly focusing on to ensure that the compacts that we have signed for the 17-18, because I had one of the concerns was the presentation that we've received, it was more looking at what has happened, but it was not indicating what is to come, the future or the projections. So what we will do is after or post the session that the two ministers had, we're now looking into incorporating the outcomes of those sessions in ensuring that all the localization objectives are not lost, and then we incorporate them through our engagements on a quarterly basis where we meet these entities and making sure that we find alignment. And I can also just echo the sentiments of my DDG to say all the issues that particularly that we're dealing with, especially in checking the supply chains, the values of our supply chains, it is very core to the DPE because we want to study and understand the value chains and the supply chains and base everything on facts, because most of the time we speak things right on the shallows without understanding the in-depths. What does really this entail and what is required to really gain the value of what we want to achieve as a country? So I'm taking those frustrations that have been mentioned very seriously to make sure that at least when we come back on the proposed session that the chair spoke about, we are able to give some level of insight and also provide the house with the projections that are required to make sure that you don't find yourself looking everywhere for information while the DPE as a shareholder department is available to provide the house with the necessary information. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Do you want to come back, DDG?
I just want to probably just in closing, in terms of just wrapping it up as well, in terms of the issues that have been sharply raised by the committee, in terms of the department, we're also engaging the suppliers that we've actually developed the industrialization ISDA. It's an association of suppliers where we can actually find people where they can be formally constituted so that we know exactly where to go to, because in many instances people say yes, there are opportunities, but then we don't know who and how and how to actually approach these people. So it's actually a formally constituted body that people can actually go to with the people who are actually in the industry, and we can actually know what the challenges are, and actually they can actually then bring it back and report it and elevate it, as opposed to us being on the other side and not being practitioners. So there is that is an initiative that is the department is actually involved in, and they also interact with the other departments, including the DTI, so that we actually know what are the real challenges that are facing suppliers. I heard the members also raising the issues of payment, etc., and all those issues actually become actually lifted up by the suppliers, because you actually get it firsthand and get the frustration in terms of what needs to be done, so that we can now hold the SOC is accountable on something that is tangible, verifiable with the suppliers on the other side. And that is why we actually have that slide on the Easter, it's on the slide 13, where it is actually being formally constituted. I thank you. Chair,
please.
As well, so you said on slide 13 you've done this, and if you go to just before the Eskom supply development, that Eskom is still here, aren't you? I see they've, you know, Public Enterprises have put a very good slide 12 up here to support your program Eskom supply development obligations, huh? Are you sticking to them? Are you meeting them?
Yes, Chair, this is the five-year achievement plan, which was also included in our presentation.
Thank you. So, DDG, right? Ms. Malasani and Director Mtwampi, that really, it shows that you two mean business. Is that why you're managing these state-owned enterprises? Your presentation is very succinct. You don't mince words, but it could be later on. The committee has several questions for you. Now, maybe, I know that may separate the little twosome there, but if you could just take a couple of seats, one behind each other on that side. Just here, there's one in the front here and one at the back, yeah, so that you're close by for the questions. All right. Is that all right? But thank you very much. And then we're going to go to the Department of Transport, and that is director here? Ms. Constance Mahelo, Rail Infrastructure, and Mr. Sipo Dibatwana, Director, also, I must assume, looking at the Department of Transport, that you don't have DDGs responsible for rail. So it goes down to the director level. Is that correct? Perhaps just you could explain that. Right.
Okay, my name is Constance Malejo.
Take it right down. Yeah, right.
My name is Constance Malejo. My DDG could not make it. The DDG for rail transport, J.D. de Villiers, could not make it because he's off sick.
Do you have a DDG dealing with rail?
Yes, we do have. He looks after all the sections, rail infrastructure.
Well, he doesn't. I'll tell you that. No, he doesn't.
Oh.
Because if he did, he'd be here. But carry on. So don't cover for him.
Okay, can I...
I know who we send communication to and where that communication went to. Probably the scrap basket, but carry on. I had to ring the ministers. Carry on.
Okay,
Yes, what I'm about to ask. Now you can see why I said they're not ready. As far as I can see, this is not even on the radar screen.
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps as a start, and we want to really apologize to the Chair and also the members, and because from where we are in the department, we got the notification quite late. And we must really apologize, but there is work that we are doing to address the situation. From the committee, yes, it was received early to the ministry.
Just a minute.
Yes.
Your maths are better than mine, maybe. I don't think so. 14th to the 24th is 10 days. And you got it yesterday. So you have to ask yourself what's going on in this department. That's why I said the DDG couldn't bother to be here. That's the way he or she stood up Parliament. First of all, where did that email even go in the letter? Where did it go? Because it certainly didn't go to you, did it? Didn't go to you. No. And when did you confirm you would be here, your department?
We only confirmed yesterday, Chair.
So it takes you 10 days to confirm to Parliament. I don't want to ask how long it takes you to confirm with your colleagues, let alone stakeholders. And yes, I am going to take this up with the Minister, because I don't believe, I've worked with her, and I know she doesn't operate in this manner. Isn't your Minister, Minister Dipuo Peters? Or have I got it wrong?
Correct, sir.
Well, I've worked with her. I know how she works. So she's got a whole lot of laggards. Do you know what a laggard is? People who don't work. Right, now get on with what you... Don't waste my time or this committee's. Can you answer anything?
Certainly, sure I can. I was just explaining my role at the department. I'm the Director for Rail Infrastructure. So I work with PRASA on the infrastructure project, including the modernization project and the new rolling stock project, which they presented here. And that's why I also came with them. The DDG is off sick today. So I'll carry on with the response that I was going to...
The DDG being sick, that the DDG couldn't respond? A month?
Today. It's today that he had to go to the doctor for scans and something else.
I'm not interested in what they went for, but I am interested in how quickly the DDG got sick after not communicating and responding to Parliament.
Okay.
So don't make any more excuses for this DDG.
Okay, can I? We also, as he explained, we received the communication yesterday afternoon. And that's why I also made plans to be here, because I know that I can respond to the issues that PRASA was going to respond in terms of the new rolling stock. Yes. If I have to start with what was stated on the letter to our DG, I got a copy of that and I was able to read it. There was an issue about the lack of coordination among critical government and public entities. So I would like to explain how we as a department look into the issue of localization in terms of this project. The department established an intergovernmental steering committee in 2015 to monitor and oversee the progress and implementation of the fleet renewal program. And the membership consists of DTI, PRASA, National Treasury and the Railway Safety Regulator, and the DOT. So the issue that Ms. Komani was raising here of the instruction note is also an issue that was discussed at the last meeting that we had. We meet on a quarterly basis, and all the stakeholders, including the DOT as well, we vigilantly look into the issues of localization. So each stakeholder receives an opportunity to raise those issues, and we discuss, and we have discussed and agreed at the last meeting that DTI and PRASA will continue with the engagement with IBELA to make sure that local content is achieved. Moving to the rail policy, the Department of Transport is currently at the moment developing a white paper on rail policy. And the policy sets out an investment-led intervention to achieve road to rail, shift and to position rail to lower transport and logistics. So at the top of this, the department looks at the relevant government policies, which includes IPEP, which we also closely look into when we deal with the new rolling stock program. And the other thing is that the department has a representation on the PRASA board. So the details of procurement and localization or local content will also be discussed at the board. That's all that I had to respond back. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Just also to add that in terms of our approach to rail, currently as a department, we, as Connie has indicated, we are looking at an investment-led approach that really emphasizes on procuring locally some of our goods. Of course, this we recognize it's not going to happen overnight. It will need to be incremental because of the situation where we come from, where in rail, as it were, it was really the lack of investment was deliberately done so by the former government as such. So we recognize that this will need to be on a face-to-face approach. So that's why then you have the approach that we have from PRASA, that first we're going to procure outside, and then with as and when time goes, and then we'll need to all of this locally, like with the, our intention, also the work that we started on having the manufacturing factory in Danota. So this is one part of the interventions that we're coming up with. So overall, we then will ring-fence the policy with the rail legislation that is coming also to Parliament in the foreseeable future. Thank you very much.
Just check with you because you said you have this strong relationship with PRASA, working well. Are you aware of the PRASA and Gibela renewal program? I mean, do they work with Gibela? Is there such a program?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, they do. That's exactly the program that they reported, which I said we have established steering committee to oversee it, but we also work on it on the project with them on a day-to-day basis. We are also involved in the forum with Gibela and Ekurhuleni Metro Municipality. We should look into the issues of localization.
Raising this with yourselves because effectively minister under which PRASA falls is your minister, the Minister of Transport. Now, Unique Engineering raised its concerns regarding this. Some of it was to do with Transnet Freight Rail, etc. But some of them, you know, it's quite specific. It's Gibela and the PRASA renewal program, quite clearly stated. Now, it does seem as if that should be clarified with PRASA, seen as PRASA effectively falls under the minister, you with transport, so that their memories are refreshed in that regard. Because that's not exactly what we heard here when I raised this question, and I raised the issue of the OEMs and some of the challenges that PRASA is experiencing here, which again, really, you know, was a white wall, sort of nothing on it, as it were, for PRASA. And we'd like to get to the bottom of what this quote system is. Now, do you know anything about the quote system that sometimes, not always, bypasses the OEM of pantographs and are issued to several companies and individuals? Is there any substance in that statement?
Chairperson, at the moment, I'm not able to respond to that because it sounds like it's got some operational element on it. But surely it is an element that we can look into because the department also has a unit that looks after oversight through the shareholders compact that is signed. So I've taken note of that. Thank you.
I do hope that the report of the oversight report of the committee, which is always has to go to the House, as it were, and is in Parliament, that you have had the opportunity to study it. If you haven't, you should utilise this time and also request your DDG that he or she should also peruse this report. so that we can clarify some of the things. Transnet has already indicated it would like to clarify certain things in writing, etc. And we would welcome that. But we're not going to hold you here to ransom, because I know I'll allow members just to take up a few points, because it's quite clear to me that you were put here to cover for the DDG. Right. Honourable Manta, Honourable Mkongi, Honourable Kornhoff.
Can I, are we having the Treasury, or, and then we will also, okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've developed goosebumps. Looking at the key challenges that DTI is raising. And on this slide, where they raise the escalation of imports into the country, despite our companies facing challenges of closure. And this, to me, brings bad memories of this ANC-led government being thrown in a deep sea in as far as accountability to our voters is concerned, because the policies that we put in place are flouted by officials of our entities. We're going back to the arms deal saga. When you look at these two projects run by Transnet and Brasa, and if I am wrong, they must prove me now and give indications that they are not drawing this government back to that mud. Why are they flouting policy that is there of local procurement? For us, it is not a joke, because we say we must embark on a radical social economic transformation, and the manner they do things currently talks against what we're trying to do as a government. And we cannot stand idle, Chairperson, and not hold the leaders of those entities accountable. We don't want to go back tomorrow and be faced with a situation that we have faced recently with SASA just at our doorstep. I think the department must at least make these two entities account. Why are the projects not being rolled as we expected times? How much do the delays cost this government? How much shall the country pay at the end of these rolling programs of the two entities, Transnet and PRASA? I really have goosebumps, Chairperson. And we can't let this ANC government being drawn into a mud by entities of the government. We cannot.
Thank you, Honourable
Mantash,
Honourable
Mkong. No, thank you very much, No, I also want to welcome the presentation from the different departments, Chairperson. I thought I wanted to follow the logic of Honourable Mantash, but mine was going to be very harsh. I was asking myself, is it not time that we apply for a forensic investigation of this process? I'm worried about this thing. I think we need a highly, highly forensic investigation on this matter. That was flouting of policies of the state like this. And we are being told today that you established a forum yesterday, whereas these projects have been launched since the laws have been unfolding in the country, and you flout those laws. For example, how do you explain an instruction note that went to departments of government, but those government departments did not implement those things? They just ignored them and left them to carry dust. And tomorrow, we are going to be told that government is not implementing its own policies. So, Jefferson, let's look at the possibilities. I'm not sure whether it's necessary for me to urge my points here. Let's talk about the investigation of this thing before it can be splashed over our faces. Because I can ask many questions. If the department...
Honourable Mkongi, and I do want you to come back to this,
okay.
But I thought if we could address the Department of Public Enterprises as well, you know. I think it was the Department of Public Enterprises who came in just then, and deal with them as well as transport itself. Let's try and do that. And then the point you are making, once Treasury has spoken, will you come in with it? Don't you agree? Yeah.
Chairperson, the Department of Public Enterprises speaks about objectives of the CSDP, slide 3, and the key performance indicators, which is slide 4. They must give us progress on these matters. What have you done about these matters, and then why some SOEs are not implementing the objectives and the key performance areas? Because if they are not implementing this matter, that necessarily means we are not going to win this battle. I'm worried about these structures that are meaning that we are establishing. Because from Parliament we said that there must be an interdepartmental committee on these issues. I'm not sure where is that. We said on industrialization. And on that one, issues of local content and so forth are supposed to be taken up. I mean, we can't have our own entities not implementing what government has agreed upon. If you go to transport also, they are saying that they are sitting in the PRASA board. What instruction do they give to the PRASA board to implement the notes, the instruction notes in terms of local procurement and so forth? So these are the issues that you want to talk about, because we're going to talk specification. There's a high specification, very highly for South African content and companies. So if your specifications are high, that necessarily means you exclude the growing industrial, organizations of South Africa. You exclude them literally. You're going to go to China and France to get such skills. We have raised this matter on the question, what is so special about European standards compared to South African standards? We spoke about tires here, we spoke about Ford and so forth. Whether when they're producing their cars in Europe, they consider our environment, yes. And we take everything that is European, and it's a problem. So I think it's very important, what is special, so special about these high standards of Europe in relation to the standards that our own companies have here in South Africa, especially black industrialists?
I'm saying this because I was saying to someone the other day, I'm quite surprised that the design of equipment is not also subject to some form of standard, because I would have thought that even a layperson knows you don't put something inflammable to something incredibly hot, you know, the way these things are designed today. And therefore, you shouldn't win a safety standard for that based on the design itself. But let me leave that one alone, because we're not dealing with that area specifically. Honourable Kornhoff, did you have a question?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to concur with my two honourable members before me, that if you deal with procurement of this size, there's always a chance that something can and probably will go wrong. Now, if you look at all this, and if you look at all the media with regard to boards that will come and go and being fired and come back, you can smell the corruption, but you can't pin it. So the proposal by the Honourable Mkhonki that there must be somewhere a forensic inquiry or investigation, I don't know who shall do it. Shall it be the Treasury? Shall it be DTI? I don't know where it lies. The departments must tell us. But, you know, it must be somewhere in our report that we ask for that. In terms of present legislation, if you know about corruption, you're an employee in a department, and if you know about corruption and you do not report it, you are liable of an offense. That's clear. And it even for the private companies dealing with the SOEs, they are aware of that and they do not report it, you are liable of an offense. So if there's a forensic inquiry or investigation, they will go after all of you.
Thank you very much. I have a few questions myself, but I wanted to recognize you've been here for some time. I didn't see you. Can't you sit over there, because it makes it very... No, that's for staff, please. I am going to recognize you, but can you go back? It's easier for others to see you as well. But I wanted to just recognize the Honorable Shorpe Sotole. You've been here since before lunch. And I was just clarifying it. Are you in the SCOPA or which committee? You're in appropriations, that's right. But thank you for coming here. I do want to raise a few points myself, which will give you the opportunity to shift across, Honourable McPherson. And the one issue was the triple PFA. Treasury will be coming, and I will address certain issues to them as well. But, I mean, I think it's public enterprises here who've made it very clear that the definition of local content in the regulations is problematic. Okay. And it says, in addition, as mentioned above, local content is calculated narrowly as a percentage of the bid price. Do you see that there on slide 7? This excludes non-local content related to development areas such as local people, train, new investment, plant, technology, etc. So these are the issues that I think that we'll take up more broadly and ask you to come in. Where's National Treasury? Right here. So that you'll see on, I hope you also have these slides, do you, from Public Enterprises, page 8, talks about broad-based black economic empowerment. And that's where we first started, before we got to the Black Industrialists Program. We started with triple BEE. And today a lot of people say to government departments, especially trade and industry and this committee, that's useless, it's rubbish, let's scrap it, let's repeal it. The codes don't work. I'll tell you why they don't work, because we have really got a culture in South Africa of when we see legislation, we understand it as meaning a little bit of advice, a suggestion, like the way people drive. A red robot is simply a suggestion that you should stop. You don't have to. It's a suggestion. That's how we see legislation in this country. And you know, in many ways, we don't have as high opinion of Australia as ourselves for certain things, but when they pass legislation, it is the law. It is the law. You wouldn't dream of just flouting it. But here, everyone is working together not to build the country, but to flout legislation. And it's an old culture in South Africa, long before 25 years. And that is, how do I make a quick buck? How do I get rich fast? So it didn't come in with the African National Congress. It's been here for decades. It's just unfortunate that we haven't addressed it as effectively as we should have. So I will be coming in, and I should let public enterprises know more on those issues when I've heard what Treasury has to say, because they may be able to cast some light on the situation, and then we'll engage on that aspect, the BBBP, you know, the public procurement issues. But I saw that Honourable MacPherson, who's been here all day, also wanted to raise a few questions or make a few comments.
I don't know if it was the Honourable Kurnoff who said it, and he said it very well, paraphrasing, that just because you can't see the corruption doesn't mean that you can't smell it, and you know that it's there. And I think that there's a lot of people in the state and in private business that know a lot more than they are letting on today. And, you know, the resolve of this committee is we want to get to the bottom of it. We're going to come after those people hard. So, Chair, my recommendation is for those that know of wrongdoing to use the Protected Disclosures Act and make a disclosure if you know what is going on. Make a disclosure and tell us what you know. Because if you don't, you're going to be one of those people that will be found wanting through what this committee's actions are going to be. Because it cannot be that we keep seeing history repeat itself, Chair. And then everyone wants to start applying for immunity from the prosecution, they want to turn state witness. But they knew about it long time before their applications are made. So I think as a committee we should say, use the Disclosures Act. People will be protected. They can make disclosures to this committee even if they know of wrongdoing. And let us use our parliamentary powers that we have to push this issue and to actually start seeing some people put in prison for effectively stealing from the state. Because if...
MacPherson, I would like to say what I said to the Honourable Mkongi, and you weren't here, I think, just at that point. He actually began this conversation about a forensic investigation and inquiry. Now, I said, let us first hear from Treasury, and then we're going to pursue this matter in depth.
I'm supporting what the Honourable Mkongi was saying. But what I'm saying is that people can also use the Protected Disclosures Act to make disclosures to this committee if they know of information. And my advice would be for those people to heed that and to make those disclosures.
Yes, I wanted you to go into that when we heard Treasury, not for you not to note it, because it is important. And then I'm going to ask Honourable Mkongi to conclude what he had to say about the same issue. So over to public enterprises and trade and industry. I think the important thing for both trade and industry, DDG Strachan and Medsi to note, is the point made by public enterprises that the BBBPFA, which we've known for some time, requires that state-owned companies adhere to the BBBEE, etc., etc. But that we also are aware that in many instances, the first series, the first sort of work done on the BBBPFA, the state-owned entities were exempted from, if I recall, from that, and somewhat later they were persuaded to abide by them. I just wanted, before Treasury comes in, the take of public enterprises on this and trade and industry, and then we're going to get the input from Treasury. Yes, thank you.
Chair, in terms of the definition that you've actually read out, that is quite correct. in terms of when we actually engaged the state-owned companies, they actually indicated to us that the way it is, as it is currently, is actually limiting them from actually crowding in other people in terms of the way it's actually being crafted. That is why there's been a lot of people being vocal to say it needs to be reviewed or repealed so that they could be actually be able to make sure that it is much more inclusive and they can actually give tenders to other people. Because when you also engaged with the other suppliers, they said we're actually not able to get that. But they probably, what they indicated to us is that they always need to get some exemption. So that actually limited the ability to do exactly what the honorable member actually indicated, to say, how do you then actually catalyze the economy or actually spread to a much broader number of people? And they actually identify that as a constraint. And they're saying we need to actually review it or actually even think of repealing so that it becomes a much more inclusive. Because we find that you're actually giving to the same people, but you're actually not being able to spread. That is the information that we actually got. Chair.
Thank you very much, DTI. Transnet, you may also come in. Just not Transnet, sorry, Transport. Just let the DTI come in.
Madam Chair, I speak on a correction, but to the best of my knowledge, and I've been talking to my colleague, the only exemptions that were granted was to the PRASA rolling stock program in terms of localization.
All right, so we heard that one there clearly, Transport.
Well, Chair, on our side, I think our approach on this is one thing that we probably need to remind ourselves and the committees that we're dealing with an industry which is capital intensive, and when you want content, you need to have an industry. And we're coming from a situation where there was no industry, deliberately so. So what has been happening since the consolidation of rail assets, so PRASA, that's the intention that Ultimate will have, then have an approach that will seek to it, that we're able to have rail to take it back to where it is now, to actually where it's supposed to be, as opposed to it where actually it is now. So I think with the interventions on the from the policy perspective from our side, and also from the intervention on the legislation, and also the current work that we are doing from PRASA, we believe we're going to go in the right direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. What we'd like is, now that you've been here most of the day, in fact, and you've heard what we've been engaging on, that you can speak to your DG, never mind the DDG, so that you can respond in writing to some of the issues that have come up in the oversight report in writing, you see. Yes.
Okay. Yes, we'll certainly do that. Thank you very much.
The director, Ms. Constance Mahelo, you seem to be pressing.
Not coming up. Okay. I thought she was. Okay. Yeah, it's gone. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to ask if I can maybe just get an opportunity just to explain the Intergovernmental Steering Committee that I spoke about, where it emanates from. Okay, it started in 2015, just as soon as the new fleet renewal contract started. That's the one that's called PRASA Kibela Project. Yes, so on top of the shareholders' compact that the department signs with PRASA, which has targets for the year, for each year, we then make sure that we oversee the delivery of the project, which then we say we'll do it on a quarterly basis, but it's actually on a day-to-day basis whenever anything arises. And we have a list of issues that we look into. And I picked on localization because it was a matter of discussion for today. And with regards to DTI, we engaged with them. We have engaged with them to understand what the issues would be before we put together the framework. And at the meetings that we have, we engage robustly on these issues. Like the previous meeting that we had, Ms. Komani spoke about the issues that she had. So we're going to be following up on that issue. It is not a far-fetched idea. It is an active item that we deal with. Okay. And the department actually is quite serious about looking into the issues of localization and local content. Thank you.
Well, if, you know, we welcome that input that you've been able to make now, but the thing is, I do think that in a written response you would add more to it and, you know, also communicate with those in your area who are responsible for this. I just wanted to refer again to you, Department of Public Enterprises, and to remind members they've also done what would appear to be a five-year Transnet supply development. Is that correct? On page 11, Public Enterprises, you did the... that was Transnet, and you did... We've already referred to Eskom, and that's the kind of thing that we would welcome from transport. You know, we've got the amount of local content, X billion, skills development, jobs, etc. And I know that you do communicate with each other as departments, etc. And that would certainly be very helpful. You'd be helping each other if you shared that kind of approach so that we get this back from transport itself. All right. Thank you, transport. Can we then turn to...
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The way just questions I think Honourable Members asked, particularly on 1064, I wanted to check with you whether would you like us just to address them now or should it form part of the write-up in the questions that we'll be doing? All right. To mention, the concern was mainly on the delay on the 1064 and how sensitive it is. And I think from Public Enterprises immediately, actually after the contracts were signed, when we realized that there was a delay, these are the things that we dealt with to understand the impact of the delay and why is actually the delay there. So as part of the write-up to the questions or to the report, we will also include this impact so that at least the Chair and the Honourable Members are aware of the impact of it and why was there a delay, so that you're not just getting hearsay from there without really getting the fact on it. So from the department, we'll actually provide the House with that information. And the last one, it was on the progress on the CSDP. The question was asked to say, why is it only Eskom and Transnet and all other SOCs? From the DPE, Eskom and Transnet are the largest SOCs that we have, and we thought of presenting the bigger impact that we have on this. But all the other SOCs within their shareholder compacts, we do incorporate the objectives of the CSDP. For this purpose, we just wanted to highlight these two bigger SOCs that we have to say this is the role that they play in as far as localization is concerned. If there is need to include all the others as well, in our write-up we'll also include the contribution that is made by all the SOCs that are within the portfolio of the Department of Public Enterprises. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for that. That was also from, just looking at our names here, from the Department of Public Enterprises. We also have coming back the Department of Trade and Industry. No, we will come back to you. Let's just get the point that's been made here by Ms. Kamani.
I think...
No mic.
The mic. Ooh, it's very fast. Okay. Since DPE says they will be tendering some information in written format, I think it will also be proper if they can even include information in terms of penalty regimes. This is one of the key issues that we have been debating in the past 2 years about the 1064 contract. We ask if the OEMs
or whoever is found not to be complying with the local content, what are the penalties? What is this contract actually saying? So if they can include that, it will help us.
I couldn't agree more. It'll also help BBBEE as well. But no one, you know, I think people should be honest enough. Do you want BBBEE? Do you? Because if you don't, you certainly have been putting that into action. All we see from the flouting is that people have got no penalties at all for flouting anything. Honorable Mkongi?
Thank you very much, President. My question was based on the objectives of the CSDP, slide 3, and the key performance indicators. I specifically spoken about these two state-owned companies. I said, are they applying this, what you're talking about, those objectives, and you must give us detail that they are applying it this way, because it is our contention in this meeting that they are not doing this thing. So that is what you are saying. We didn't say that to come with all of them.
Honorable Chair, thank you for the question. It's now clear. We will provide, I believe that in writing we'll then be able then to put more detail, particularly on how these entities apply to the KPAs and the objectives of the CSDP. We'll put them in writing and ensure that we do differentiate how far is ESCOM doing in as far as all those objectives and the KPIs, and so is Transnet. So we'll provide both that in writing to the House. Thank you.
I do just want to point out, this is a key aspect of your mandate, is it not? Therefore, it should be tripping off your tongue. And it's not. Honorable Montash?
I am not sure if departments are becoming shop stewards of their entity. I'm saying, Chair, I'm not sure if departments are trying to become shop stewards of their entities here. Because it is clear, based on the presentations that we got today, that your entities are not complying to the policies of the government. I don't know what we are going to explain and what we are going to submit, because we've got the information now. Are you protecting them or what?
You see, it's the impression that's conveyed by the paucity of information and frankness. Anyway, let's hear from Treasury first before we conclude. And what we want to do, members, after engaging with Treasury, we then want to open it up to broader statements that you may wish to make of today. I hope that gives everyone then an opportunity to address some of the critical issues. So what we're going to have now is National Treasury coming in and sharing with us, you know, particularly on this subject, their response. I mentioned the PPPFA, among other issues, localization, the issue that's come up on verification in the past, etc., etc. But it's Mr. Willie Matabule, Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, Senior Manager. Ms. Leander Peterson, Senior Manager. I take it also in the same section, Chief Procurement.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to the honorable members of this committee. And thank you very much for inviting us as the National Treasury to come and make a presentation on the current procurement reforms, of course, in support of local industrial policy initiatives. Firstly, if I may just quickly give just a 1 minute background. I'm sure this matter came up in the last colloquium last year. Since 2011, the Treasury promulgated the regulations on FFA precisely to bring in issues of triple BEE as well as local procurement. So these were two issues that were brought into the 2011 regulations. And as a result of those regulations, the Treasury, of course, together with the DTI, has issued a number of instructions in terms of the PFMA. And these instructions were meant to ensure that all organs of state on all designated products for local content comply with those instructions. I mean, that's the fundamental reason. And of course, the PFMA does make provision for exemptions where it could be proven that there is no capacity locally. But as far as we're concerned, the exemptions should not be a blanket exemptions. These exemptions are per tender. I think the DDG from the DTI did make mention of the fact that the PRASA program was somehow given an exemption. So, but all organs of state from all spheres must comply. That's the issue with these instructions. So what we have done now in 2015 leading to 2017, members would recall that the president made a call here in parliament around the 30% and so on. From that point on, I think departments were all over the place, you know, trying to implement, but there was no framework. Running around. But eventually, we decided that in as much as there have been concerns around the shortcomings of the PFMA to address certain issues, but we felt as Treasurer that the PFMA was the instrument in the interim to address those issues, to make sure that organs of state do support the SMMEs, as of course pronounced by the President, including of course issues of localization and other issues, pending the review of this piece of legislation. I think the Minister of Finance, when he delivered his budget speech in February, did allude to the fact that there is a procurement bill in the pipeline. I think we have already solicited quite inputs in terms of that bill, and the bill will, after of course Cabinet has approved gazetting for public comments, I'm sure you'll be seeing more of us coming to this committee to debate issues that are of course covered in that bill. So let me go back now to the PFMA. On the 23rd of January, the Minister promulgated the new regulations, which of course were a culmination of the interactions and consultations broadly, and these regulations of course are effective from the 1st of April, and currently we are engaged in a process of rollout since they were promulgated, you know, preparing organs of state to ensure that come 1 April, these regulations are implemented. Now, part of the regulations is the issue of local procurement, which, of course, has always been there since 2011, and is still here in these regulations. Now, in terms of the same local procurement provisions, the Treasury and the DTI would continue to identify areas where there are opportunities for local content and production, to make sure that we leverage on public procurement to support industrial policy objectives. And we hope that even in the bill, the upcoming bill, there is, of course, a draft portion you know, making provisions specifically on leveraging on public procurement to support industrialization in the country. Of course, since 2011, coming up to now, the number of designations that have taken place, of course, a quite number of them, and then ranging from small furniture up to the rail, rolling stock, and so on. And these are designated sectors and products for which organs of state are expected to implement whenever they invite tenders. I think if you look at these regulations, they specifically state that in all designated sectors, organs of state must include in their bid documents that only locally manufactured or produced goods and services and sectors would be considered for those particular tenders. Of course, if there is no capacity, I've already indicated that organs of state are at liberty to approach the Treasury for exemption. But we did say that exemptions would be exceptions on a tender-by-tender basis, because we can't give a blanket exemption as we want everybody to comply. What has since happened, Chair, from last year, there was a structure that was established between the Treasury and the DTI, of course, to deal with future designations. So because the issue is before we designate, we need to do a research and also look at the economic impact of what would be designated in terms of the outputs as well as outcomes, whether it creates jobs and so on. So, but that structure is already there, and there is a compliance group between the two departments that's working hardly on designations to ensure that industrialization is of course supported. And we are also aware that perhaps designation may be one instrument, but there could be other instruments that we could be looking at, you know, to make sure that we enforce industrialization in this country for job creation and so on. And those are some that are being considered by the structures that I've alluded to around tax incentives, import tariffs, etc. I think that these are some of the measures. And we also said, insofar as the auditing of the implementation, the AG, of course, there are discussions with the AG to make sure that there are performance audits as well from time to time to make sure that organs of state do comply at least with those designated sectors. But again, the regulations go further to say where there are no designations, there is nothing prohibiting organs of state from stipulating in their tender documents, you know, based on research, that a particular tender would only be restricted for local suppliers. There's nothing. Because the designation process, of course, is a quite long process, but in acknowledgement thereof, that's why that provision was made. There is designation. There are also sectors which are not designated, but where they are not designated, still organs of state, all of them, you know, are encouraged to stipulate in their tenders, because that's the only way in which we will be able to ensure that there is maximum implementation of this program. So I think, if I may just leave it here for now, because we're just focusing on the leveraging for industrialization. But if you look at the regulations that were promulgated by the minister in January, they extend beyond just localization, but localization is part of these regulations, and we are also taking this localization into the bill that would be presented, you know, to all South Africans for comments, as well as to the parliament committees for input. I think I must stop here for now, Chair. My colleague is here. She can also add to what I've just said.
Ms. Peterson. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to add one thing. Firstly, as a point of correction to our slides, we said 23rd of January, but it's actually the 20th of January. Yes, the promulgation. And then also, just on DPE's slides regarding the fact that the triple PFA is limiting, you know, supplier development, etc., we just wanted to say that we have heard the comments of people, and we do know that the entrenchment or the embedding of the 90-10-80-20 in the Act has been a source of limitation. However, and that is why we are looking in the long term to repeal the triple PFA once the bill comes into effect, or the Act, the Procurement Act. But in the meantime, in the revision of the regulations, what we have provided for are, I think, two basic clauses that can give effect to helping some of the designated groups, like the pre-qualification criteria clause in Regulation 4 that also talks about pre-qualifying on the basis of your BEE status level, pre-qualifying on the basis of being an EME or QSE, as well as pre-qualifying on the basis of subcontracting with either 51% and more black women-owned enterprises, black youth-owned, and enterprises 51% owned by people who are living in rural and underdeveloped areas. So that does take it, as well as the subcontracting provision in Regulation 9. I just wanted to add that.
Clarify that so that we're all sure, because these were questions raised this morning, as you heard yourself, about what about smaller people, etc. You say this is not in the current regulations.
In the regulations that have been promulgated on the 20th of January that come into effect on 1 April.
Yes. Okay, right. So by the 1st of April, this clarification regarding rural areas and small businesses will be effective. I think that's good news. But could you also tell us if your good news includes a clarification of local content? The slide 7 of the DPE, where's the Department of Public Enterprises, they referred to challenges relating to ability to optimize supplier development objectives. Remember they spoke about that earlier? I still raised this. Given the ones that are going to become effective now on the 1st of April this year, is this addressed, this definition of local content?
Okay, since local content and designation is actually within the purview of the DTI, what is happening as well is that the definitions were being reviewed in the SATS 1286, the SATS 1286 of 2011 definition, that standard, is being reviewed. But what we've done now in the new regulations was, instead of now defining it, we'd rather then, we deferred and said, well, in terms of the updated definitions, that will then take effect. So I know the DTI as well as some other interest groups are now working to revise that. So we didn't put it in the body of the definitions anymore, but we've just spoken to, we've used the definition that the DTI proposed to us in the body of the regulations.
Right. I'm just looking at yourself then, DDG Strachan. Do you concur, and are you, you know, will we be able to reduce these challenges that are being experienced?
Well, ma'am, if I understand the question correctly, we're working very closely with the National Treasury, and did, in relation to the amendments of the regulations of the triple PFA, and we are working very closely with them with respect to amending the Act. The colleagues from the National Treasury are absolutely correct. We are responsible for a particular limited part of procurement, namely procurement for industrialization and the instruments related to that. The National Treasury is obviously responsible for broader procurement issues. And so I think we are at idem with the National Treasury. There might be still some discussion around precisely some of the definitions and so on and so forth, but it's not a major contradiction.
Be more specific. See, when I get this from public enterprise, and a lot of these entities here, SOCs, Transnet, etc., and the like, fall under you, fall under the minister, am I right? Public enterprises. And then I see issues like, well, the PPPFA requires that a minimum threshold is set for local content. I'm very pleased about that. But when we start getting to an issue of the definition is problematic, and then I hear the Treasury saying, well, look, they've left that out and that they're going to ask DTI to deal with it. Then I'm asking, on the 1st of April, when these regulations are effective, what is the situation going to be? Or are we going to get Transnet coming back and they still somehow working under some other form of definition? Or are they going to be working under something that's going to promote local content and black industrialization? You see, that is the issue. Because they're going to be coming back. And they're going to say, you see, it's this act and we told you. So we're going to get you in order, we're going to get the others, and then Treasury and DTI. So let's hear, DTI, your initial response. It might clarify others that are here, and then Treasury last.
Madam Chair, as far as we understand it, the SETS, which is the standards, SA Bureau of Standards, technical specification for localization remains in place, not to mention the fact that as far as we are concerned, government departments should be looking to how to maximize localization, not to be looking at loopholes in the legislation to get around localization if anybody is doing that. Because actually, as the National Treasury have said, the old PPPFA and its regulations and the new regulations and the existing act allow any state entity to define localization and the terms and conditions of that localization in any tender and procurement process. So my own view is that we shouldn't be looking for possible gaps in the legislation as a way of getting around localization. The state, the policy on localization is absolutely clear. There might be, you know, tweaks which are required in the legislation, but that's, I think, true of all legislation, and it will be strengthened as we go forward. I think there's a difference between the legislation and the will to implement the spirit and the letter of the legislation.
Thank you, DDG Strachan. And just on the left here, you had your hand up. Is it DPE there?
Yes, Chair. I think earlier on I just wanted to probably indicate as to when we were actually asking the question around the investment program for Transnet in terms of why is it now pushed out. In terms of the market, I'm sure they can actually also speak about it. In terms of the corporate plan as well, what they actually submitted to us was that given the fact of what is happening in the TFR and what is happening in the economy, the market demand strategy was actually premised on a seven-year rolling period, but now it is actually, they've actually done it over a 10-year period in terms of the forecast, because in terms of the economic growth forecast that was actually envisaged, when they submitted when the MDS, I'm just trying to recall from the top of my head, it was a 7-year period, but now it has been pushed out to 10 years given the economic slowdown that has actually been
EDG, we get there's an MTES every year, just moving on. So I want to know exactly when this was envisaged in order to project your period. So when was this envisaged, in 2010, 2014? When was it envisaged? I see someone from your department has an idea. Yes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In 2012, the MDS was then launched for 300 billion over 7 years. The projection in the economy then gave a sense that the economy was going to do well, and then they invested or they aimed to invest 300 billion. Based on the 2014-15 results, the economy started giving a different picture, and then for the 15-16, they cut down the budget that was going to be spent over the MDS period, but they did not just cut it down. They deferred. The correct word is deferring certain projects that were supposed to happen in the immediate to further on in the years. So for the seven-year period, the MDS still applies, but those projects that we don't need immediate capacity are deferred further within the 10-year period. Thank you, Chair.
That certainly makes a lot more sense, and I can understand the DDG as well now. So it was from 2012 and then 7 is 2019. But you need to inform your suppliers, because you know there's a huge policy on supplier development and keeping them in the loop. All right. And you were here when it was very clear to me that that had not been done. So please do that. And then the suppliers would never have asked for the incentives they did ask of DTI and others, because they based theirs on what had been ordered, in inverted commas. All right, now we've done that leg and we're coming last. You wanted to just comment as well, Treasury?
Thanks, Chair. Thank you very much. I think in our rollout program, as we're engaging departments, I mean, this issue of the apparent shortcoming in either the definitions and so on has come up. But our response has always been, you know, we should perhaps not only look at the letter of the law, but the spirit. That's very important. You see, if the spirit is to empower and the spirit is to localize, that's what the broader principle of what law is all about. That's what we've been saying. And to add, there is a standard, you know, which was developed precisely to deal with issues of localization, which is managed by SAPS. But that was a joint kind of process between SAPS, Treasury, and DTI. So in that standard, as we present in our roadshows, we do say that the standard, of course, and the definitions are in that standard, and we are also developing an implementation guide. And in that guide, we are kind of defining in details what is contained in each of these regulations to make sure that organs of state do not perhaps hide behind interpretational issues and not implement these regulations. So we want to make it easier for them. So the guide will be issued next week to make sure that it is in time for the 1st of April for the implementation of these new triple PFA regulations. But this is just an interim measure. The bigger picture is the bill that is in the pipeline, which we hope should be finalized during the course of the 2017-18 financial year.
I don't really like this principle and concept of pipeline, because sometimes they stretch from Cape to Cairo. But anyway, yes, thank you, sir.
I think there is some response to the question that I'd wanted to raise, because I had Ms. Peters saying in the long term there is consideration of repealing the triple PFA. Now, if you have the policy of government being radical transformation...
Thank you.
Thank you. Then if you have the policy of government being radical transformation and the impediments that are there in respect of the triple PFA, it gives us a bit of a challenge, Chair. And the issue that we are just given a sense that in the long term there is consideration of repealing the triple PFA, we need certainty.
On the one hand, I certainly agree, because that's exactly what I'm suggesting as well, that we need something that says this is it. We don't, you know, we want some date. But you yourselves don't give us these dates, you see, deadlines. So, I don't know, I've got to be fair to everyone. But let's get Treasury to respond to that fair comment. Right. So, sorry, yes, Honourable Manta.
Can I be clarified? Can our entities and our departments clarify us? We're going for a police conference. We must not go to that police conference and lie again. Are you saying the radical socio-economic transformation is not going to happen until 2019?
I know it's... I hear your concern, Honourable Mantash, that the principle of radical transformation, it seems that with the entities in front of us, we have to get them first to first base. You know, like what happened in poultry yesterday, one or two of them mentioned the word transformation, the rest hadn't heard of it. And it seems, I'm not disagreeing with you, that much of what we've heard here today has hardly shoveled the first load on transformation, let alone radical. And that's a serious worry to those of us who are here in, you know, trying to steer a radical economic transformation process. And it's, I'm not surprised about why other colleagues in this committee smile and ask us in Parliament, in the House, what do you mean by radical? Because if our entities don't know what we mean by radical, I'm not surprised politicians don't know. And I think it's fair comment from a member here to say, you know, if things are going to go on till 2019, where is the concept of radical transformation? But let us, I think it's fair comment. Let me put it that way. Yes, Treasury.
Thanks, Chair, through you. I think what we did not present here because our focus was only on localization. But let me just quickly highlight the changes in the 2011 regulations, you know, that have been made in the 2017 regulations to respond to the members' issue around radical transformation. The first issue that we've done, those who are familiar with the regulations, the 90-10 and the 80-10, the 80-20, I'm sorry, the 80-20 and the 90-10, the 80-20, the threshold was up to 1 million. So all bids and price quotations, by the way, which you know, could be invited through the 80-20 principle were below 1 million, and above 1 million, it was the 90-10. But what we've done now in these new regulations, we've lifted that threshold to 50 million. So tenders and price quotations up to 50 million will be evaluated on the 80-20 principle, and then above the 90-10, above the 90-10, above 50 million, the 90-10. That's the first change. The second change is what my colleague referred to around pre-qualification now, which is contained in Regulation 4. Now, in terms of that pre-qualification criteria, there are three elements which are very important, you know, to note. The first element is organs of state can now prescribe or stipulate in a tender document that for this particular tender, we want this BBBE level status to participate. So meaning anybody else who does not comply with that particular requirement is then disqualified. So that's the first requirement. So organs of state can stipulate and say for this tender, we want this level BE. That's one. The second part element of that pre-qualification is organs of state can now stipulate in the tender documents that this tender is only for EMEs and QSEs. That's the second element. The third element is organs of state can stipulate in the tender documents that this particular tender, how big it is, must be subcontracted to black-owned business, which are 51% black-owned, 51 women owned,
51% owned by people from rural and townships, 51% owned by youth, as well as 51% owned by military veterans. So all these are meant to kind of talk to this thing of being radical, to say you can specify. Now we're saying to departments as we go around, they have the tool. It's upon them now to make sure that they use that tool, pending that bill. That's second. The third critical change is the fact that on all government projects and contracts which are 30 million and above, there is compulsory subcontracting. So if there is, I'm just making an example, there's a 1 billion contract. So 30% of that would be 300 million. Now we're saying that 30% must be subcontracted to these designated groups that I've just mentioned. You know, it becomes compulsory for organs of state, by the way, to make sure that they identify opportunities where, you know, blacks can play a role. So I think these are three critical changes that we've made in these regulations, whilst we are, of course, going to be gazetting the bill. And let me just talk to this bill. We've already submitted a draft for consideration, of course, by cabinet committees for gazetting, for public comments. And as I indicated, we also want to make sure that at least we finalize this process as quick as possible. But, of course, there is consultation that still needs to take place. So these are some of the key elements of the new regulations which were promulgated.
You know, I must say that it's heartening to hear what you have to say, Mr. Matabule, but I think, you know, people like me who are part of the furniture, we have a background of the PFMA as it first started. I mean, one came to the legislature in 94, it wasn't there, and we were part of the process. So some of our members are new members to this committee and may never have even been in finance as such. And they're not as familiar with this piece of legislation. Am I correct? Yes. And therefore, we are going to ask you to come back more formally, you know, in a formal letter, as it were. And at the moment, we are meeting on Friday, the 5th of May, and we're looking at that date. It wouldn't be as late as where we are now. It's likely to be closer to about 1,200, 1,300 or so, you know, 1,400. So don't you think, members, that would be a very helpful idea for those of you who are not entirely familiar with it? But even I think, Honourable Macpherson, although you've been here longer than some members sitting there with you, you may well commit as well. And you've also got some new members from your party attending the committee who haven't seen it. Yes, Honourable Macpherson?
Look, I don't want to be like some who overpromise and underdeliver, so we'll wait to see what my attendance will be on the 5th of May, but I'll do everything that I can. But I don't want to...
By election, have you lost another seat?
Well, no. Okay. Well, we're trying to gain more seats, but...
No, fortunately, the Honourable Macpherson does have a sense of humour, so we are all fortunate. Thanks, Honourable Macpherson. Look, members, but I do mean that with finance, that there is a real need for us to look at this so that we're better informed, because it does directly relate to the work that we are doing. Do we all agree at least on that? And for the rest of you, I want to say this before we engage in our last process, and I'm going to ask Mr. Medima to get Mr. Mkongi in. We'll need him for that end bit. And that is, I've had discussions with Mr. Hermans, who's the committee secretary, as well as Mr. Medima, who's just gone out then, that we also need to be able to ask members, all of you sitting here, if you've got any questions or want to request further information, please put that in an email to both Mr. Hermans and myself. Is that correct, Mr. Hermans? so that we can formulate this in a letter which will go to everyone who came here today to engage with us, so that you have this. Now, I'm very concerned that this communication to transport does not wind up in someone's waste paper basket. So where is transport? Please, perhaps you ought to give Mr. Hermans an email that is not dumped. Please. Please don't regard our emails as, what do they call it, trash or, I don't know, what do they call this? I don't know, all kinds of other things. Because I know if I see spam and trash, I just delete it permanently. So maybe there is something there that's deleting the emails you get. But I want you to give me an email that's going to get to you, so that you have it. Secondly, I would like all of you, if you have not already, to acquaint yourself with Parliament's website. And on Parliament's website, you will find the ATCs. And you know the old system of, let me just put in transport and it jumps up. I don't know if your computers are different to mine. Very easily to see what has been said about your department or your entity. Pull it out, but don't come here where we have very limited staff and tell us you never saw it. You never saw it, all right? So we want the written responses. Some of you have said, I really want to do that. And those of you who will be asked to expand on certain points, we would like all stakeholders here to submit written reports or responses to all questions, which we will be sending you only, regrettably, on Tuesday. And I see we're asking you to have it back with us on the 30th of March. Is that right? Yeah, you've
heard.
The 30th of March. Should you require an extension, please write to Mr. Hermans. Please email him so that we can, you know, look at that. All right? So that's very important. So members, we must come in and do our job before Tuesday. Can we please do that? Now, with respect to other issues, I've asked for the Honourable Mkongi to return. I don't know where he is. But he, you did hear him to begin with, referring to his concern about what he's heard here today. And the concerns that other members have raised, and the word concern is really an understatement. So I'm going to open it up to the committee for general inputs here. They were on the oversight, everyone except the Honourable Shorpe Sitoli, who's not in our committee, but others were. In fact, we had about seven people on that oversight. And you back here today, listening in to those we engaged with. So you've heard of the responses today. So what do you think we should do? What comments do you wish to make? General comments now. You've spoken about, you believe that things are not right here, and not as Shakespeare said, in the state of Denmark, but rather state of this area, the sector, shall we say, broad sectors. That's what you had to say, Honourable Korinoff. In fact, you spoke about actually smelling the corruption but not seeing it. The Honourable Mantash also raised her concerns. So I think express them now, because Ms. Sheldon is going to note them. She wants to note this so that it'll be part of the report. Honourable Korinoff will come in first.
Chairperson, it's, you know, it's not now the time to make more enemies and have long speeches. So I think what I've said is being noted. I'm not going to repeat what I've said already. I think we need some sort of a serious investigation to see what is going on deeper into to some of these entities, but you know, I think she got what I've said previously.
Thank you, Honorable Kornoff, Honorable Manta.
Chairperson, I'm not also going to repeat, but what I just want to highlight is that I stand firm on what I said, that I'm not happy with the delays in delivering on the projects that we had agreed on as a country. I agree with Honorable Mkhongi on necessarily an investigation into the delays. I'm not pointing fingers at anyone, but I just want us to be on the correct footing so that we don't see ourselves as a committee sliding into what other committees have found themselves in. My just a bit of a surprise is the round about 10 by some other companies on the deliberations they made to us on the oversight. And you ask yourself why. Why now? Because they presented emotional, you know, inputs in the oversight. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van Schalkwyk, and you will close off then, Honourable Mkhongi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's also it's just important for me to mention that our interest is to promote the interest of the poorest of the poor, and to perform effective oversight in ensuring relevant legislation is adhered to at all times without fear or favor. And in this instance, I'm really disappointed in what transpired today, but I think this is only a tip of the iceberg that we've seen today. And as I want to echo what my colleagues has raised in terms of a thorough investigation that needs to take place to get to the root cause of everything that's actually happening. Because as government, we depend on the bureaucratic system to strengthen our arms in terms of ensuring that legislation that has been passed are being adhered to at all times. And it's clear that it cannot be business as usual in this instance. And if heads must roll, then it so be it. And it must be a clear direction in terms of the entities, but also in terms of those who are supposed to benefit through the initiatives of DTI, because I think there's a lot of money that has been invested, and we can't allow things to happen like this. We can't be, as the Department of Trade and Industry, be a pumping machine, just pumping in money, and we don't see any results happening. And it should be true transformation that needs to happen at the current conjunction. And I believe, Chairperson, that the SOEs is key in trying to help us to strengthen this component that we want to enforce in terms of the radical economic transformation. And if we don't start now and be firm, 2019 is around the corner. We can't sit and wait everyone in your own corner and not be part and parcel of getting into the mud and ensure that things are taking place in the advancement of our poorest of our poor. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Van Schalkwyk, Honourable Mkhongi.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think it is a matter of principle. It is not a matter of which hand. The fundamental trouble or challenge of delivery in South Africa has been the SOEs or SOCs. Because we've been raising this in terms of skills development, internship, since 1994. We've been raising that they must drive transformation because they are a muscle of the state to drive that. And those things are not being implemented. Some of them are just implemented a year or 2 years ago. Entities that are being bailed out day in, day out by the state and the taxpayer's money is SOEs. Pumping a lot of money, they are failing, they are doing 1, 2, and 3. The last one that was a failure where Parliament intervened was an SABC. And we know what happened when Parliament intervened robustly on the question of SABC. I'm suggesting, Chairperson, that we need to look at the possibilities of forensic investigation, specifically on Transnet and BRASA on these projects. That is the first proposal. Secondly, I suggest, Chairperson, you also look at the possibilities, because these treasury notes are being flouted deliberately. And what are the consequences around this particular thing? If they are not going to respect what treasury is written, what is the standing, legal standing of these treasury notes in relation to the PFMA? And if the leadership is not implementing what is sent, what are the consequences? Thirdly, to look at the possibility, Chairperson, of the performance contracts of the leadership, one of the DGs, two of the CEOs of these entities, to check that their contracts must integrate what is their delivery, one on localization, two on local content and industrialization. And if they are not succeeding on the implementation of these particular things, we must look at the possibility, how do we get rid of these individuals? Because we can't allow this situation to continue, Chairperson, so we need to deal with that. Then lastly, I just wanted to ask perhaps Treasury to deal with this. The question of the special legislation dealing with foundries in South Africa, you know, there's a problem of these foundries, they are going down, and there are implications of environmental laws, electricity and other related things that makes these foundries to go down. What is the legislative window that we have to maneuver on this specific? But I'm firm, Chairperson, on the matter of forensic investigation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mkongi. Honourable McPherson, you had virtually completed because I didn't stop you as I stopped Honourable Mkongi when he started to talk. But please add whatever it is you wish to.
No, I was just saying that I certainly support the view for such inquiries that I think that much like the much like Parliament was a focal point for SABC executives, journalists, etc., to make disclosures to Parliament about what they viewed was wrong with the organisation. I think that we must take up that mandate once again. Once again, allow people to make disclosures in terms of the Act to Parliament, to this committee, and for us to start getting a real grip of what state we find ourselves in, and then go from there. But we have the constitutional mandate to do so, and I think that we must exercise that fully. So I support the views of the Honourable Mkongi, and it's just how we package that going forward.
Thank you very much, Honourable McPherson. The Honourable Shope Satorley often attends meetings of DTI, and she's raised her hand. Did you wish to comment? And by the way, she's also a veteran of the struggle.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. I come from appropriation, and in that committee, we've made an observation that a lot of wastage of public money is usually on grants and the SOEs. And it is very... it's hidden, it's somewhere there, you don't see it, you see the department and you don't see those corners. But we have made a resolution that I think whatever happened, it was the last time it was happened, it won't happen again. We have got the responsibility to appropriate the money, follow the money and check if we get value for that money. And I can assure you, Chairperson, from appropriation, that we are going to be very, very much serious on that responsibility that we have been given. And I am now convinced that it was not the wrong decision, because I can see your own committee is not very happy. They are even thinking of, you know, because Honorable Nkoki is a very diplomatic person. Honorable Nkoki, you're going to get our support. Next time we'll be having maybe the Hawks in our committee, so that when people come, we don't waste time. They know.
No, you know. But I think the point of saying that is really to say we mean business. I just wanted to make sure, though, from the Department of Public Enterprises, slide 5, the more I read it, the more I'm convinced it doesn't line up with what Treasury is saying. And I'm going to read this again. I don't want you to respond now. You respond in writing, there, Treasury, National Treasury. And that is, historically, the SOEs reporting to DPE as Schedule 2 public entities in terms of the PFMA, that's the original one, were not bound by the preferential procurement policy framework and its regulations, as they were excluded. So in your written response, make it very clear when they were included, so that we don't shift around here, that we get this quite clear, because there does appear to be some difference of understanding between what National Treasury is saying and what some of these state-owned entities. And then we are going to, once we get the written responses, and before this goes as a report again to the House, we will be inviting people back again, but for a shorter input, 5 minutes here and there, so you correct this, correct that, and so on. Is that clear? We don't want things going through Parliament, as someone has indicated to me during the break, that a lot of what's in that report is not accurate. Well, if that is the case, you have your opportunity to correct it right now, all right? Not this minute, but in writing. And I think it's far better for it to be put in writing than anything else, because we're not running a court here, not like Argentina, which is what happens there. You wear the judicial robes, etc., when you summons people, and then sure, for sure they get arrested. No, this is a people's constitutional democracy. So rather than just walk out now, I know that you're not involved in the program, but we need to concentrate. And you know what happened at lunchtime? It was like a marketplace. So what we're going to do, members, is I will be sending, because it seems that very few people even looked at this report earlier, which was on localization, the colloquium. And really, you know, this was attached, I'm even told, by the committee secretary. But one of the things here, it says local. There were 7 conclusions, okay? 7 in a colloquium. And we seldom give that many. 5.6 says local public procurement requires collaboration across the respective government departments, public entities, as well as provincial and local government for successful implementation. We're not going to be able to do it. And remember, when this went to Cabinet, there wasn't a dissent. That Cabinet, that consists of your political leadership, they agreed. So if they agreed, you are flouting even your political leadership here. Never mind the legislation that we, you know, have passed and the President has assented to. This is very serious, and we do regard it as serious. And I don't think this committee, since I've chaired, which is my second term chairing this committee, and you can correct me, Honourable Shorpe Sitoli, I have never asked for a forensic inquiry. I've never had to. But unfortunately, I'm not going to have anyone saying that this committee abdicated its constitutional obligation of oversight and ensuring not only policy, but that legislation and regulation is secondary legislation. It is legislation for all of you who think it isn't. It is secondary legislation that you may not break these laws. So we're asking departments to put, where, you know, you, some of you have been asked, get some sanctions in place so that this can be effective. Members, before I thank you and release you, the committee secretary has been doing a little drum tattoo on my hands, wants to speak about the program.
Members, we have distributed the committee program. There will be a slight, not a slight change, just to highlight the 2nd of May, where we indicated based on...
Are you looking at your programs? No. Based on, notes.
Based on yesterday's meeting, that we will have a further engagement with the poultry industry, and we will invite those who were not able to attend and those who were not invited. They will also be at that meeting on the 2nd of May. Then, as the chairperson indicated, the 5th of May we will add the engagement with the National Treasury regarding the provincial procurement briefing on that matter. So that will be added to the program.
Yes,
on the 5th of May. We're also doing the interviews for the appointment of the chairperson of the National Lotteries Commission on that day, the Friday the 5th. So that Friday will be longer than 1 o'clock, so it will probably change to 3 o'clock. Then you will also see that on Thursdays we've indicated that we'll sit in the afternoons, but that will be subject to the approval of the chief whip, because
three line,
it depends, because there will be ETCs running during the month of May, so those will be subject to approval from the chief whip. The committee will proceed on the 28th of June, and during the period we will be dealing with, hopefully, the Copyright Amendment Bill will also be introduced in Parliament, so we'll be dealing with both the Copyright and the Performance Protection Amendment Bills.
Yes, we'll deal first with the the Performance Protection. Honourable MacPherson?
Yeah, I just want to raise a concern with those bills, because if you recall, I asked the question, what objections had been received in the public participation process, and I can't remember who said it, but one of the objections were that the bill, which was just a copyright amendment bill, should be split into a copyright amendment bill and a performers and protection bill, and that's why they were split, and that was done so because there was a feeling that we were dealing with it the wrong way around, because the Copyright Amendment Bill informs the Performers Bill. And so I'm just concerned as to, are we going to be dealing with it in the correct way this time, the Copyright Bill and then the Performers Bill, or are we dealing with them simultaneously?
The Copyright Bill has not hit Parliament yet. It hasn't been tabled. So I'm always wary of commenting on something as a chair without having studied it. I don't know what we will get tabled here. Do you follow? So when it is tabled, then we will take a decision on that. But as you know, we did take a decision on the performance, protection, because when I studied that, and after I'd consulted with the legal unit here in Parliament, it became apparent that we would have serious challenges, which may even be constitutional ones, if we dealt with that when it was referring to a bill that was in someone's head. remember the issues. I don't want to repeat that. We took, I think, the correct decision as a committee. A bill was referred to us. We took a decision. Let's wait till we get the copyright. Now, we don't have the copyright, Honourable Macpherson, and until we do, I don't want to make a statement on it, please.
Okay, so then, I mean, I'm assuming that that program is tentative still. Until we understand what's happening with the bill.
Look, I think you ought to have a far more hope. In fact, you should read my little poem on narrative of hope and being inspired, because it's not really healthy for a young man like you to not have that much hope. Now, in my opinion, and I'm saying my informed opinion, not just, you know, outside, I am reliably informed, having gone through processes in Parliament as well, that we can expect the copyright bill here in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks. That is of constituency, you can see. So I do believe we're correct, but I do understand where you're coming from, Honourable Macpherson, so I'm not entirely discounting that. And should our program change, it will be because of bills not being here when they should be. On that particular note, the Secretary would like all these, I don't know what to call them, these very private sort of contact numbers that you keep for constituency in case something urgent comes up. Because he's unable often to get hold of you on the numbers we've got. All right. But I don't want to go... No, can we please leave that? But I'm just suggesting... Yeah. All right. And on that note, we'll see you on Tuesday, most of you. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you. Never about it. Ali, not leave this. Okay. Go, Ali.
Hello, he wasn't just being happy.
Thank you.